the ones down in the world. All the little things that go up to make a personality. He looked along the row of horsemen. They caught his eye, and there were almost imperceptible nods from famine and pestilence. War turned in the saddle and spoke to his wife.
"Right now, dear. I'm not confused at all. Could you get down, please?"
"Remember what happened when—" Mrs. War began.
"Right now, please, my dear,"
said War, and this time his voice, which was still calm and polite, had echoes of steel and bronze.
Mrs. War was suddenly flustered. "That was just how you used to talk when—"
She stopped, blushed happily for a moment, and slid off the horse. War nodded at Death. "And now you must all go and bring terror and destruction and so on and so forth," said the auditor. "Correct?" Death nodded. Floating in the air above him, the Angel of the Iron Book slammed the pages back and forth in an effort to find his place.
"Exactly. Only while it is true we have to ride out," Death added, drawing his sword. "It doesn't say anywhere against whom."
"Your meaning,"
hissed the auditor, but now there was a flicker of fear. Things were happening that it didn't understand. Death grinned. "In order to fear, you had to be a me. Don't let anything happen to me. That was the song of fear."
"He means," said War, "that he asked us all to think about whose side we're really on."
Four swords were drawn, blazing along their edges like flame. Four horses charged. The Angel of the Iron Book looked down at Mrs. War.
"Excuse me," he said, "but do you have a pencil?"
Susan peered around the corner into Artificer Street and groaned.
"It's full of them, and I think they've gone mad."
Unity took a look.
"No, they have not gone mad. They are being auditors. They are taking measurements, assessing and standardising where necessary."
"They're taking up the paving slabs now."
"Yes, I suspect it is because they are the wrong size. We do not like irregularities."
"What the hell is the wrong size for a slab of rock?"
"Any size that is not the average size. I'm sorry."
The air around Susan flashed blue. She was very briefly aware of a human shape, transparent, spinning gently, which vanished again. But a voice in her ear, said,
"Nearly strong enough. Can you get to the end of the street?"
"Yes. Are you sure? You couldn't do anything to the clock before."
"Before, I was not me."
A movement in the air made Susan look up. The lightning bolt that had stood rigid over the dead city had gone. The clouds were rolling like ink poured into water. There were flashes within them, sulphurous yellows and reds.
"The four horsemen are fighting the other auditors,"
Lobsang supplied.
"Are they winning?"
Lobsang did not answer.
"I said,
it's hard for me to say. I can see everything. Everything that could be."
Chaos listened to history. There were new words. Wizards and philosophers had found chaos, ch, which is chaos, k, with his hair combed and a tie on, and had found in the epitome of disorder a new order undreamed of. There are different kinds of rules. From the simple comes the complex, and from the complex comes a different kind of simplicity. Chaos is order in a mask. Chaos. Not dark, ancient chaos, left behind by the evolving universe, but new, shiny chaos, dancing in the heart of everything. The idea was strangely attractive, and it was a reason to go on living. Ronnie Soak adjusted his cap. Oh, yes. There was one last thing. The milk was always lovely and fresh. Everyone remarked on that. Of course, being everywhere at 7 in the morning was no trouble to him. If even the Hogfather could climb down every chimney in the world in one night, doing a milk round for most of a city in 1 second was hardly a major achievement. Keeping things cool was, however. But there he had been lucky. Mr. Soak walked into the ice room, where his breath turned to fog in the frigid air. Churns were stacked across the floor, sparkling on the outside.